from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia. Online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, in the final days of this legislative session, it's all about the budget. Delegates spend hours debating the budget bill on the floor while public employees express concerns over the future of their health insurance. Senators back off from a plan to sweep one-time monies to balance the 2017 budget. And Secretary of Revenue Bob Kiss joins us to put it all into perspective. That conversation coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Delegates spent 3 hours debating their budget bill today and adopted the measure on a vote of 61-38. Senators did the same yesterday, also approving their version of the budget. But the two are incredibly different. The Senate's includes increased revenues through a bump to the state's tobacco tax. The House didn't approve that tax increase and instead looks to one-time monies to balance the 2017 budget. Earlier today, Secretary of Revenue Bob Kiss explained why the House's plan won't work for West Virginia into the future. So, Secretary Kiss, I want to start by saying thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know it's a crazy time over at the Capitol, so we appreciate it. So let's start with the why. Why are we in this place that we're in with the budget?
Like many other energy states, the continued significantly lower level of energy prices in this country has a significant impact on states that rely on energy taxes. It's not just West Virginia. States like Kentucky, Wyoming, Alaska, all of those states are going through this. Pennsylvania, they're all struggling with it right now. Because the prices are so low, the tax collections are dropping off precipitously. Particularly last fall, we started to see in the Department of Revenue, even though prices have been down for a while, we started to see last fall significant drops in tax collections. There's a couple things going on. One is the prices are low, but the other thing started to happen because the prices were so low and there was a glut of supply is the producers were not able to sell it. So they started cutting back on production, which further affects the taxes. So when that happened in West Virginia, what basically happened was roughly a $250 million hole was opened up in our budget, current year, fiscal 16, which ends this June 30th, and in coming years, because it's anticipated this is going to continue. So when you have a $250 million hole, you've got to do something to fix it. Analogy for a household. We live in a home. We've got $1,000 in expenses a month, but we're spending, or we've got $800 in income, and we've got $1,000 in expenses. We can't keep doing that. We can't live beyond our means. State governments are very similar. State governments, unlike the federal government, cannot borrow money perpetually. They can't print money, so they have to have balanced budgets. Our Constitution requires a balanced budget. So you got to plug the hole. You got to fix the hole, not just one time, but permanently going forward. So what the governor's solution was is starting back in the fall, he has this power under the Constitution, he immediately imposed cuts in the current fiscal year of about $95 million, including education, health care, a number of different areas. He did those cuts in 2016 in the fall of last year. And then what he also did when we came into session said, I've looked at this. This is really what the Department of Revenue does when we put the governor's budget together. And I believe that the prudent way to get out of the woods is to continue those $95 million in cuts. So the budget that he introduced for 2017 now continued those cuts. And he said, and to make up the additional roughly $150 million, I think we need new revenue measures. That was the tobacco tax, and it was the telecommunications tax. That roughly equaled $150 million. But keep in mind, that's permanent ongoing money into the future. Each year you'll collect it until you change that statute. And the cuts also were permanent cuts. So going forward, we fixed the hole under that solution. So then we moved into the session, and what did the Senate do? The Senate and the House had different approaches. What the Senate wound up doing was passing the tobacco tax, but actually at a higher level than the governor proposed. But by total dollars, the Senate's solution was really pretty much the same as the governor's solution. It permanently fixed that hole. It did not set forth a plan to live beyond our means. And that, in essence, is what the Senate passed. They passed that over to the House. They passed the tax bill, the tobacco tax bill, but again at a higher level. Then you move to what the House did. And the House's proposal, in essence, which none of this is obviously complete yet. That's the process that we're ongoing now. But what the House basically did was they went into a number of different areas where they thought they had identified some one-time money. So the analogy, again, for a household would be maybe a savings account. And by coming up with those dollars, roughly the $150 million, because the House did not and would not pass the revenue increases, they basically said, we're going to find some one-time money to plug that hole this year for the budget we're building for 2017. But if you kind of see where I'm going with this, the greatest concern the administration's had about that approach is not that using one-time money to work your way through your problems is a bad idea, as long as you have a long-term plan to plug the structural hole. And that was the real concern when the governor and when the Department of Revenue looked at the House proposal was, what is the long-term plan to close this hole? Put another way is, what is your plan so that going forward we don't permanently live beyond our means? That's happened in this state before. I was elected in 1989, and it was many people were elected that year, a large entering class in House delegates, and part of it was because there was a perpetual battle between the administration and the legislature about dealing with a structural hole in the budget. We were living beyond our means for years. One of the end results of that was one of the largest tax increases in the history of the state in 1989. You can't perpetually go and not pay your bills. So, the governor was a product of that generation. I was a product of that generation. And to put it in simple sense, we don't want to go there again. We want to plug this structural hole. And, again, the way the governor proposed doing it, $150 million in new revenues, $95 million in cuts. You might ask, well, why didn't we do more cuts? A number of reasons. I'll give you a couple quick ones. One was there's been a lot of cutting in this budget by the governor for several years now because we've not met our revenue estimates. That was before what happened in the area of energy prices started hitting us. But because of that, we came to the conclusion, we looked at many agencies and departments, that if you were to cut further, you will now finally reach the point where you're going to see layoffs. You know, private sector and public sector, obviously I've worked in both in my life, and sometimes the public sector is going to have to see reductions in layoffs. But one of the concerns we had is because we're losing so much severance tax revenue, and by the way, that then starts to seep into income taxes, because the person that was getting a $10,000 royalty check a few years ago from the property that they own that was being pumped, now they're getting an $800 royalty check. They're paying less income taxes to the state. So it affects that. And if now all of a sudden, if you really believe we should reduce public employment, which, by the way, has occurred over the last several years, but if you believe we should reduce it further, another concern is this probably is not the best time to be doing it, since you're already significantly starting to impact and lose income taxes because of what's happening in the energy sector, what's happening in the coal fields, what's happening in the oil and gas fields. So that basically is how we came, why we're here, and how the three different approaches were presented by the governor and the Senate. And again, I would emphasize, there's not a lot of difference. Really, the main difference between the Senate approach and the governor's approach is the Senate did not do the telecommunications tax and instead did a higher tobacco tax. In the House, very different approach. They did not do any taxes. They said, we'll not do any revenues, which is a possible solution. But then if you look at it and want to solve the hole, so to speak, one way you could do it is you could cut the budget by another $150 million. The governor didn't believe that was the direction to go in, but the legislature is a separate branch. But the concern now is that if that's the House's plan, to cut the budget by another $150 million, or collectively the legislature's, because the Senate's budget does not work now because the revenues aren't there, then start doing it. And if you're going to start doing it, understand the implications of doing it, if that's the solution. Again, the governor's not necessarily always right. We presented our proposal. We believe it's a measured approach, cuts and new revenues. But if you're not going to do any revenues at all, and you're not going to continue to live beyond your means, what that brings you to the inevitable conclusion of is you need to start cutting the budget more.
So we've seen these three versions, and we've talked about the implications of the House version. The House is basically looking for more cuts and sweeping these accounts that have one-time dollars in them, dollars that won't be back there next year. As the revenue secretary who looks over the health of the fiscal health of the state, what are the implications of just continuing to cut and to use these one-time dollars? What does that mean for the state of West Virginia?
Well, first of all, a point of clarification, and I'm not being critical when I say this, but I was finance chairman for 4 years and speaker for 10 years, was involved in many budgets. The House is not. That's one of the concerns. The House budget does not really do significant additional cuts. It just basically uses one-time money so that it doesn't have to do significant cuts. And the implications of that are, as I mentioned earlier, is why you can use one-time money until you run out of one-time money. What's the plan when you no longer have one-time money? And that's really the big question that the governor has when he looks at the House proposal. I understand you're using one-time money. You're not able or not willing to pass the revenue measures. You're using one-time money to make 2017 work. But how are you going to make 2018 and 2019 work? And if there's no answer to that, then you start to come to the conclusion, certainly if you've got responsibilities and have worked with state budgets, to come to the conclusion that it's probably not a good idea to use one-time money. If that's the answer, you're not going to be able to provide additional revenues, then maybe the answer now is, as difficult as it might be, is further cuts. And then you get to your question, which is, what are the implications of that? There's several fold. I mean, we've provided this information to the legislature. The House Finance Committee, to their credit, asked for additional information. What would happen if we cut more? And we had the agencies and departments put that together, and we provided it to them, and it showed a number of things. And I'm not suggesting that none of these can happen or even should happen. The governor made his decision what he thought was the right approach. But things we believe would happen would be there'll be reductions in employment, public employment. I gave some reasons earlier why there were some concerns about that. All of the regional tax offices in the state would probably close, and the employees in those offices would no longer be employed. Probably be some closures or changes in the state parks. There probably also would be, I think, one of the things higher ed indicated, while I don't think that they proposed that any colleges would close, they did indicate in likelihood some of the campuses, some of the branch campuses would close. So it's those kinds of things. But that's what a legislature is elected for, and that's what a budget is all about, is making difficult choices with what's always limited resources. And you might also ask, is why is any of this even important to the average person on the street? Anybody that owns a house and has a mortgage knows that by the time, if you ever looked at it, know that by the time you get done, you've paid more money in interest than what you paid for the house cost 30 years down the road. So state governments have to. They have to borrow money to build roads, to build schools. It's just a simple fact of nature. And when states do that, it's similar to a mortgage. It's usually a 20 or 30-year bond where we borrow money. A bond is floated on Wall Street, and we borrow money. And when people lend you money, they want to know that they're going to get repaid. And if there's a risk they might not get repaid, you have to pay them more interest. And in part, that's what this is all about, because this state really has, for our size of our state and our challenges economically, we have a pretty good bond rating. We have a better bond rating than many states in this country. And that bond rating is in large part, I would suggest, a byproduct of many years of the legislature, Governor Tomlin being there most of the time. I was there for some of it. Many other legislators are there making responsible decisions and not deciding we're going to kick the can down the road and we're going to allow a structural hole to continue. So what happens if you don't do that? What happens on Wall Street, New York, so to speak? Well, what happens is, and I've got a piece of information here, but I'll kind of compartmentalize it. Pennsylvania is going through this. They're an energy state. And Pennsylvania has been unable to pass a budget. And they have a structural hole in their budget, just like we do. And Standard & Poor's, this is in the business news today, Standard & Poor's has threatened to cut Pennsylvania's AA- rating. We have a higher rating than that. For general obligation debt by one or more notches. In a report to its clients this week, the agency cited the state's failure to pass a budget package for fiscal 16 that addresses long-term structural balance. What that means is Pennsylvania, when they go to borrow money, is going to pay more interest. The taxpayers of that state to build their schools, to build their roads, which we all need, is going to pay more interest. And the taxpayers of this state, just like in the home mortgage, that's why you want a low interest rate. You want to pay for the house, not interest. Well, if this happens in West Virginia and our bond rating slips backwards because Standard & Poor's looks at us and asks me the question as the Secretary of Department of Revenue, what's your long-term plan to deal with the structural balance? And my answer is, I don't know. Like on Family Feud, everybody yells, good answer, good answer. Well, that's not a good answer, and they don't want to hear that. And at some point, they're already looking at West Virginia, they're looking at all the energy states. At some point, it could result in, if we don't resolve this and deal with the structural hole on a long-term permanent basis and show we're not going to perpetually live on one-time money, if we don't solve that challenge, then our taxpayers are going to have to, and they can afford to, our taxpayers are going to pay more interest to borrow to build schools and build roads.
So an interesting couple of days, potentially a couple of weeks or a couple of months ahead as lawmakers look to balance that budget. Secretary of Revenue Bob Kiss, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This afternoon, a Senate committee approved a supplemental appropriations bill that pulls $22 million from agency accounts to balance the 2016 budget, the current fiscal year. The Finance Committee did not, however, include additional dollars to balance the 2017 budget. That leaves the House's version of the budget unbalanced. Without a balanced proposal from the House and a Senate budget based on a revenue increase that did not pass, Secretary of Revenue Bob Kiss says lawmakers are likely to have to start from scratch during an extraordinary session called later this year. Since the first day of the session, public employees have expressed their concerns over the funding for their health insurance in this tight budget year. Rob Engel reports.
With less than 2 days left in the 2016 legislative session, members of the Finance Board for the Public Employees Insurance Agency, or PEIA, have serious concerns about the changes to the state budget with regards to the agency's funding. The budget bill, containing a line item to take $67 million from the state's Rainy Day Fund and other special accounts in order to fund PEIA, was debated for several hours on the House floor today. During this 60-day session, the Democratic Party has criticized the majority for ignoring the need for additional funding to PEIA, where Republican members argue the current budget does fully fund the program. In a press conference this morning, six people spoke in direct opposition to the current budget bill, saying there is no agreement between the House and Senate leadership on how to fund the agency that provides health care coverage for more than 230,000 West Virginians. Joshua Sword is the Secretary Treasurer for the West Virginia AFL-CIO and a member of the PEIA board. Sword says dipping into the one-time dollars allows for a temporary fix that will leave the program even worse off next year.
The problem that creates is it might make it okay or doable for the plan year 2017, but when we start talking about plan year 2018, we've got to make up that $67 million plus the additional rate of inflation we're facing for the following year. So it puts us right back in the same place as we were when we started this discussion a few short months ago at roughly $120 million in benefit reductions for the next plan year.
But House Finance Chairman Eric Nelson defended his committee's budget on the floor, saying they had to consider all options in an extremely tight budget year.
I will say that our balance, our budget, is in a very difficult time right now. And so whether it be revenue measures or other expense cuts or additional cash sweeps, yes, all of those are on the table and need to be on the table. And a 60-day session is not sufficient time for this body to be prudent.
Earlier this session, a bill was killed in the House Finance Committee that would have increased the tax on a pack of cigarettes by $1. The Senate had approved the tax and dedicated some of the revenues to the PEIA reserve account, allowing the program to help sustain itself into the future. Both Democrats and Republicans voted against the bill in the committee. For the legislature today, I'm Rob Engel at the Capitol.
Senators have voted to approve a bill that would require West Virginia voters to show some form of identification before casting a ballot. During debate on the floor today, some Democratic senators argued the bill will deter voters from going to the polls in a state where voter participation numbers are rapidly declining. Republicans, however, argued the bill will not keep people from voting, but protect the integrity of the process.
House Bill 4013 would go into effect January 1, 2018, not affecting the voting process during the current election year. The bill includes a long list of documents that can be used to verify a voter's identity, anything from a valid driver's license from any state to a utility bill or paycheck. Senate Judiciary Chair Charles Trump says the list of documents that can be used has been greatly expanded since a similar measure was taken up last year.
We had a similar bill last year. But on the floor that maybe didn't make the floor, but in committee, and it was limited to identifications, cards, and documents that have photographs. This year's bill goes way beyond that, because it permits a valid Medicare card or a Social Security card. As the members of this body know, those Social Security cards do not have photographs.
Trump explains even without any of the documents, a voter could still cast a ballot by simply having another adult, even a poll worker, verify his or her identity by signing an affidavit. Trump says the bill is about protecting the integrity of the voting process, but a number of Democratic senators stood to disagree, including Senate Minority Leader Jeff Kessler.
I am concerned about the voter suppression opportunities that this has, and I would rather err on the side of caution and encourage more people to go, not to be afraid because they don't have the appropriate identification and stay home because they may think they need a photo ID. They may not know that they need just an electric bill. They may not know they need just their voter's registration card. And they may, you know, be concerned that they don't have a driver's license so they can't vote. So I think we should send a clear message that we want everyone to vote.
After the Democratic arguments, Trump defended the bill. He says the state has a long history of voter fraud, so long a sitting West Virginia Supreme Court justice penned a book about vote buying. This bill, he says, will help ensure that doesn't happen.
There's more than one way to be disenfranchised. It is possible to be disenfranchised by having your vote canceled by the vote of someone who has no legal right to vote. That's disenfranchisement.
Senators voted 20 to 14 approving the bill. It returns to the House of Delegates, where members will have to approve the Senate additions to the list of verifying documents before it can be considered by Governor Tomlin. The House of Delegates approved a bill today that allows voters to determine if restaurants and wineries in their county should be allowed to sell alcohol on Sunday mornings. The brunch bill was approved on a vote of 84 to 15. Businesses across the state had lobbied the legislature to approve the bill, calling it an economic development measure. House Speaker Tim Armstead notably voted against it. The bill now returns to the Senate, where the referendum amendment will need the chamber's approval before moving on to Governor Tomlin for a possible signature. Another measure making its way through the House would call an Article 5 convention of states to amend the U.S. Constitution. Both chambers took up a similar provision last session, but ran out of time on the final night. Liz McCormick reports this year the resolution is on track for passage.
House Concurrent Resolution 36 would add West Virginia to a list of states applying for an Article 5 Convention of States to amend the U.S. Constitution. The convention would focus on amending the federal constitution to require Congress to balance the nation's budget each year, except in times of a national emergency. Republican Josh Nelson of Boone County attempted to amend the resolution today, making it an interim study. Republican Tom Fast of Fayette County spoke against the change.
If we don't fix this debt, if we don't fix this uncontrolled spending that's put forth by Democrats and Republicans in Congress, if that is not fixed, this country is ruined anyhow. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for action. It has been studied. It has been studied. This is not just a new concept that came along yesterday.
Democratic Delegate Larry Rowe of Kanawha County spoke in favor of the study.
There's no need for a rush. Someone said that this provision's been in the Constitution for 229 years, and it's been dormant. And there's a good reason that it's dormant. It's because people need to study whether we should, as someone said, turn the key on Pandora's box. This is very dangerous stuff. This is really dangerous stuff when we start tinkering with the constitutional basis of our country.
Before delegates could move for a vote, however, Majority Leader Darrell Coles of Morgan County moved to have the resolution be placed at the foot of the agenda. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Tomorrow is the final day of this legislative session, and you can tune in to watch the proceedings tomorrow live on the West Virginia Channel. You can also stream all of the action on our website at wvpublic.org. And this is the final episode of the Legislature Today for this season. From all of us here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.